Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there and welcome to another Arseblog Arscast right here on arseblog.com. Hope you're well after what has been, one of those weeks, hasn't it? A bit underwhelming, a bit disappointing, a 1-1 draw at Old Trafford and then a 0-0 draw with Sunderland, which I guess is part of our makeup. You know, we're nice people. That's a problem with Arsenal. Too nice. What other team in the world would go out of its way to make really average goalkeepers look good? We do. Collectively, we said, hey, look at this Costel Pantilimon guy. Look at him. Freakishly tall. Probably got no real friends. You know what we'll do? We'll make him look good in a game by shooting everything straight at him. And that way people will say, hey, that guy is actually quite good. We should sign him and give him more money than he's already got. How many goalkeepers down the years have made a fortune out of Arsenal's niceness? I'm kind of sick of it, I have to say. But we'll touch on the week that was throughout this podcast. We'll give you the winner of our competition from last week. The very simple-to-enter competition, of course. So there were many entries, but we will pick one who will get a signed copy of the book Together, The Story of Arsenal's Unbeaten Season. I nearly forgot the name of it again, right there. I should do my homework before we start. And of course, this is the final weekend of the Premier League season. It looks as if we're going to finish third. It would take quite the turnaround for that not to happen. We'd have to not get something from the West Brom game and also Manchester United to beat Hull by a considerable amount to overdo the goal difference thing. And look, nothing is impossible in football, but it kind of looks like we've got third. Sunderland are now safe, so it's between Newcastle and Hull as to who goes down. Hull playing Manchester United at home, and Newcastle are at home to West Ham. So you kind of fancy that it's going to be Hull that's going to go down. But imagine if Hull beat Man United and Newcastle lose to West Ham. Newcastle could go down. I know we spoke about this on the Arsecast Extra, and you know that would be my preference, simply because it's always kind of funny when a big team goes down. No? Just me? I think it is. Remember when Leeds went down? That was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. But that, of course, has much to do with the fact that when I grew up as a kid in Yorkshire, I was an Irish Arsenal fan in a Roman Catholic school just outside Hull, and pretty much everybody else was a Leeds fan. And I do remember this one guy. I know I've spoken about this before, but he used to do that thing. He was a big bully of a guy, but he used to do that thing where he'd like get thumb and finger on either side of your neck and he'd squeeze and he'd make you say that I love Leeds. And you're like, I don't want to say that because I really don't. I hate Leeds, actually, as it happens. I really don't like Leeds. But then, you know, torture, as it probably could be classified, is designed to get people to say things they don't necessarily want to see. So to make the searing pain go away, you say, I love Leeds. And then you're sort of consumed with this hatred throughout your entire life of an entire football club, all their fans, everything to do with them. So when Leeds went down, that was particularly hilarious for me. I don't know if that big fat bully is alive or dead. I don't care. I'm not going down the Facebook route of looking him up and seeing if he's like really, well, I know he's really, really ugly anyway, but even uglier now. But, you know, maybe his kids hate him and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I don't care. I'm over it. Apart from the fact that I'm always up for a bit of, you know, things going completely and utterly wrong for Leeds. Hey, I'm a small, petty man and I bear grudges. What can I tell you? Who else went down? Big teams that went down. Middlesbrough, they weren't really a big team, but they were in a couple of cup finals and still got relegated, I think. And Manchester City, they went down relatively recently. And then you just kind of have the yo-yo clubs, the ones that go up and down all the time. But Newcastle going down would be pretty funny, I think. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for that. So we'll touch on Arsenal's week as the show goes on with our guest, who I'll introduce to you now in a few moments' time. But the other thing that caught my eye this week, apart from Louis van Gaal's quite amazing speech, which was really quite funny at the Manchester United postseason bash that they have. He's quite something, Van Gaal. But there was a video taken just after the Arsenal game. Well, I don't know if it was just after the Arsenal game, but he was outside the ground, outside Old Trafford, and there were some fans there, and they were singing a song about him, and they were getting him to sign autographs. And I don't know if you've heard the clip, but this is how it went down.
Louis van Gaal's Red Army.
Come on, Louis, can we have one from you? Louis van Gaal's Red Army.
Louis van Gaal's Red Army! Hey!
So I put this up on Twitter, and it was at God AFC number 10, who came back immediately and said that it reminded him of the scene in Young Frankenstein, where they're singing Putting on the Ritz, which goes a bit like this.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes or cutaway coat, perfect fits.
But something Andrew Allen said to me, just it kind of struck a chord with me. I, you know, sent it to Andrew, and he replied back saying it reminded him. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, he's right. He's absolutely right. So what you do, I've had to sort of fiddle around with this a little bit. So here's the original.
Louis van Gaal, Red Army!
And just one more time so we know.
Louis van Gaal, Red Army!
Then what you need to do is you need to just kind of adjust the pitch slightly. So bring the pitch of it down. Then what you need to do is you need to slow it down. So adjust the tempo like this. Then you've got to add a little bit of reverb and my old favorite flange. Can't do without a bit of flange from time to time. So this is what you get. And then when you reverse it, you get this. So finally, what you do then is you've got to layer all those sounds together, add a little bit of compression, and hey presto.
Chewie, we're home.
There you have it. Chewie van Gaal. I know. It's fucking mind-blowing, right? Hard to get your head around this one. Anyway, we are heading to the final league game of the season. We'll preview that a little bit later on in the show, as well as giving you the result of the competition, amongst other things. But now, for the final time this season, I'm delighted to welcome back our old friend, Philippe Auclair.
Hello, Andrew.
That was very serious.
Yes, I'm in a serious mood today.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll make sure we have a serious discussion then. Let's start. Let's start with Sunderland.
End of.
That's it. It's finished. Sunderland on Wednesday night. People will focus on the chances, and we'll come to that in a while. But what struck me was something that has been a bugbear of both of ours over the last number of seasons. In that Arsenal, when they moved the ball, moved it in a very leisurely fashion.
Yes.
And without the panache, without the zip that creates the kind of openings that you need against a team that are playing the way Sunderland did.
And something which we'd already seen against Swansea, for example. Which is worrying. Part of it might be due to fatigue. I'm probably not the only person to be a bit surprised to see... I've seen Wenger, you know, field the same team six games in succession. And in fact, the one against Sunderland was not very different from the one which played against Swansea. And it's quite clear that some of those players are running... The tank is running low, basically.
Do you think there it's a physical fatigue or mental fatigue? Because
I think
not...
a bit of both, because, you know, now the objective... I think it's a weird moment, because the objective of finishing in the top three has been achieved, albeit in a rather bum-squeaky way. and now I think that many of them have already got an eye on the FA Cup final, thinking, I don't want to do anything stupid. I don't want to burn myself too much. I mean, which is quite logical. By the way, Villa were exactly the same in their last league game.
Yeah.
So I can understand that. But what is more worrying is the fact that it's a team that, when it reacts, is quite superb. But it takes something special to sting them into action. And we remember what happened against Monaco after the first 8 minutes. A certain lethargy sets in. And we've seen that many times, actually, this season. Suddenly, ooh, something happens, and then they react, and they spring into life, and then they're convincing again.
Mm. Did you see anything against Sunderland that might suggest that they might spring into life against West Brom?
chances. I think he's going to refresh the team anyway. I mean, it would be really silly not to. Third place is all but assured. I think. I mean, I'm sorry, I haven't looked at the goal difference, but
I think it's plus seven.
It's plus seven. Well, I think it would take something quite extraordinary for this goal difference to be reversed by Manchester United at Hull in particular. So I would imagine he's going to pick. I wouldn't say a B side, but he's going to rest a few players. Players like Olivier Giroud, for example, who's looked really, really tired recently. I haven't seen anything against Sunderland that made me feel particularly optimistic. And I have to say, I see the 30th of May approaching with a certain dose of apprehension.
Mm. I don't think
I'm the only one. I think maybe I'm trying the old double hex here. But objectively speaking, there are deficiencies which have appeared in that team over the last few weeks. They were already also apparent against Manchester United. I mean, again, same thing. How long did it take the team to wake up and to put together 20 exit minutes at the end?
Yeah.
But before that, it was not very reassuring at all.
Mm. It is a trait sometimes of Arsene Wenger's team that when they're on a good run, and when something happens to knock them off that, it takes them a little bit of time to recover, to find their rhythm again. And he's spoken many times, hasn't he, about how confidence and belief is the easiest thing to lose and the most difficult thing to build up again.
I'm sorry, you used the word rhythm, and I think that is exactly the word that you have to use when you talk about Arsenal. Perhaps of all the teams at the top of the English game or at the top of European game, it's the one which relies the most on a certain kind of tempo to get going.
Mm.
And you can feel, and I think every single Arsenal fan, or actually Arsenal observer who's seen them in action, when you're there in the stands, after 5 or 6 minutes of a game, you have a fairly good idea of how the game is going to pan out. Just because of the pace at which the ball is transmitted, the angle at which the ball is transmitted, of course, but especially the pace. When Arsenal is good, they move it extremely quickly. And I mean, the pace of the passes is very high. And then you have what you had against Sunderland. Even at the end, when it was the Alamo and there was chance after chance after chance, the passing was quite slow, pedestrian, and very lateral as well.
Yeah.
And they still created chances, didn't take them, Pantaleon was excellent, etc., etc., etc. But it is a team which is has got its an extraordinarily moody kind of team.
Yes.
Perhaps because it relies on rhythm and tempo to create chances, as opposed to, for example, a team like Chelsea, which will rely on defensive organization, fast counter-attacking. You know exactly tactically how are they going to set up. You could say the same thing with Manchester City, or even with Manchester United now, which are teams which play to a system. Arsenal do have a system of sorts, but it's not what pushes them forward.
Mm.
And what the energy, what provides them with energy and drive, for some strange reason, goes missing. And it does at moments when you don't expect it. That's it. You think this is a team that can't score a goal, and actually hasn't scored many goals recently.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, one of the complaints, obviously, against Sunderland was the fact that 20, Arsenal had 28 shots.
Yeah.
And the finishing, when they did get into reasonable positions, just wasn't good enough. So does it suggest that this is a symptom of the lethargy, the tiredness of the team that you refer to, or is it more evidence for people who would say that Arsenal need to improve their striking options? Would this mythical world-class striker have made the difference between 1 point and 3 points last night?
Yes, perhaps there is. Well, okay, who is that then?
I don't know. That's, you know.
Yeah, okay, I know. It's like you've got the unknown soldier, you've got the unknown striker. No, I think it's a bit of both. I think when you start to draw too much on your physical reserves, you do, lose a bit of sharpness, and which is absolutely essential, of course, in front of goal. So there's that. Because I don't think anybody would say that, for example, Alexis is somebody who is not a good finisher. He's a fantastic finisher. Even he was, he's tired, poor thing, and he has every right to be tired. He's been playing nonstop for I don't know how many years now. He's hardly had a holiday. Giroud is the same thing. He's very tired again, and also because of the kind of role he has when he's very much the lone man and he's got to do so much work, which actually goes unnoticed most of the time. But it's also, yes, obviously perhaps the accent on finishing. One thing that I remember, do you remember Wenger talking about, I think it was a Santi Cazorla goal, when Cazorla actually passed the ball into the net, and Wenger was full of joy. He said, well, that's what I'm trying to explain to them. You don't have to blast it. You can place it. I remember very clearly that. I was thinking, well, why don't they do it week after week then, Arsene? Why is that? what is it that you cannot quite transmit to them?
Yeah.
Suddenly, I think the reluctance to shoot from distance has gone. You know, if you look at the stats, that's gone. But that's not really the problem. The problem is more, a certain sharpness in the box, a willingness and a capacity to transform chances into goals. And, of course, our famous world-class striker, of whom nobody knows the name, would be a wonderful addition. I mean, who could it be? Lewandowski? I mean, who?
I don't know. That's something for the people who like to speculate on transfers,
yes,
to that extent. But perhaps there's an issue as well with the fact we don't have Danny Welbeck available, who could easily have come in for Giroud. And at a time when Giroud was lost a bit of form, it would have been good for Welbeck to get another run at centre forward. That was missing as well. And maybe Theo Walcott, who obviously doesn't convince everybody and really isn't convincing the manager at the moment, because he started Jack Wilshere on the right-hand side of midfield ahead of Walcott. What did you make of that decision? Does it tell us something about the way the manager feels about Theo Walcott at the moment?
I certainly think so. I think that he would have a point saying, I need to give some match time to Jack Wilshere, who's had, I was going to say, he's had an awful season. He's had an awful few seasons. That's quite understandable. On the other hand, the way that Walcott is used now as a kind of impact sub in almost every single game when he's obviously fit. To do that as well, after he scored a very important goal, even if it was a fluky goal, or maybe the dubious goals committee is going to say he didn't score it, which is probably the case.
Yeah.
Anyway, to sum it up, yes, I think that it shows that not everything is going right between the player and the manager. I honestly wouldn't be surprised, and I know I'm falling to speculation that the relationship between Walcott and Arsenal didn't last much longer.
Mm. It is an interesting one, obviously, because of his contract situation and 12 months, and the manager said he wants to keep him, wants him to sign a new contract, we've been down this road many times with players
before.
In the past,
yes,
where he says he wants to keep them, that's his aim, he's confident that they're going to stay, and then all of a sudden they're holding up a different coloured shirt. So we'll wait and see what happens there. But in the current circumstances, do you see a place for Walcott on that right-hand side, given that when Ramsey plays there, and we saw it even when Wilshere played there, there's a tendency, because they're naturally central midfield players, to drift inwards, and Arsenal become way too compact. It's like almost a funnel heading towards the penalty area instead of trying to stretch the play and make space in a different way.
Let's not forget the Ox.
Of course, yeah.
Whom I think should be option number one, but personal opinion.
But he's not fit.
He's not fit. That's very true. But he will be fit at some point. Let's hope so. No, you're quite right about the tendency of Ramsay to go and of Wilshere to go back in. But I think what's been missing when I've seen Theo Walcott this season, admittedly, it hasn't been an awful lot, and not necessarily through his fault. I've noticed that he was taking far fewer risks in the way he was passing the ball or attacking his opposite. The right back, for example, or the left back. And that is obviously something which mustn't have escaped Wenger, so which could be explained perhaps by lack of match fitness and match play, simple as that. On the other hand, I found him slightly a bit coy almost when you compare with the Walcott we knew before he got injured against Tottenham, who was really at that point where you thought he's really bringing something to the table. He's really sharp. His finishing is improving. He's as quick as he's ever been. I don't get this feeling anymore. I mean, perhaps it's just me, but I don't get the feeling of a player who is relaxing in his own style of play, who is using his main qualities, which is pace and some decent technique. And by the way, he's not a bad finisher at all. He can be quite superb in front of goal, but he can also have these moments when he doesn't seem to be there completely on the pitch. I mean, and I wouldn't say it's the lack of football brain, like Chris Waddle said. It's perhaps a lack of. He seems to be alone. He seems to be playing his almost apart from the team. I found him very frustrating. You can hear that in my voice. This season, when I've seen him, I found him very, very frustrating.
He is that kind of a player, though. I think he is.
But he brings something different.
Sure,
that's official.
I mean, I get that, and there's a finishing ability that he has, but I think you're right to say that he is sort of standing a little bit separate from the rest of the team in terms of his technical ability and the way that he fits into Arsenal's system, and that Arsenal have very technically good players, good passers of the ball who move around a lot. And Walcott is somebody who can very often be on the periphery of a game and then pop up and get you a goal or get you a couple of goals. So I do wonder if his style perhaps has now got to a point where Arsene Wenger thinks, well, you know, I'd rather play somebody who can keep possession on the right-hand side than somebody who only touches the ball 8 times in a half. Like the impact that Walcott has been perhaps made up through other players elsewhere, and that this is the thing, and maybe Walcott's aware of that too.
Yes, and it's an uneasy relationship at the moment, and you can see it. You see a manager who is not at ease with this player, given the way that he uses him. You've got a player who is not at ease on the pitch, who is not playing at the full, its full capacity. He's not getting the match time he would be hoping for. Who is also entering the last year of his contract. I mean, this doesn't bode well, to be honest.
The other thing I just wanted to touch on very briefly was when he did bring Wilshere in the other night. I thought it might be at the expense of Santi Cazorla, who I love watching him. He's fantastic. But I just thought, given the game that we were playing, that Cazorla might have been the one to sit out rather than Coquelin, who I guess in certain games, and perhaps the one like Sunderland, can get a little bit bypassed because his role it's not quite as necessary when you're attacking all the time. Nevertheless, Cazorla's looked a little bit off the pace in the
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Last couple of games.
Yes, he's one of those who is finding that the season a little bit too long for his taste.
So, I think it's perhaps a case that the manager is struggling to find the right balance in his midfield, because Cazorla's performances there have been outstanding.
Absolutely.
And he's performed a lot better there than I think most people would ever have thought he could, despite the fact everyone knows he's such a technically gifted player. But if he did want to bring Wilshere back into the team, surely giving him the minutes in his favourite position, or moving, you know, bringing Ramsey into the centre of midfield, let the two of them work together, would have been the better idea.
Well, the thing you were talking about, the balance, and I think Wenger had found the balance a little bit by trial and error, a little bit by, actually quite a lot by chance, when suddenly, you know, Coquelin came back, Cazorla started this new role as a kind of deep-lying playmaker, Mesut Ozil was put in his natural position as a number 10, and suddenly things started to click, and Arsenal had a wonderful series of results. And he, which is one of the reasons, by the way, why he fielded, you know, the same team six times in a row in the league, which is, you know, never unheard of for Wenger.
Yeah.
And he'd found this balance. And I think anything that you will change in this particular setup is going to affect it probably far more than it ought to, because if you look at the Coquelin-Cazorla relationship, the Coquelin-Cazorla-Ozil relationship, it is not something. If you take one of those three out and you replace him by Wilshere, Ramsey, whatever, Rosicky, by the way, whom I would have liked to see more of, but
yeah,
that's a different matter, you realize, oh, suddenly the relationships are not going to work the same way at all. And there was a good dynamic was found, a good balance was found, and every time you're going to move it a bit, and I agree with you, I think, how does Wilshere fit in this system? Normally you would say, yes, perhaps in Cazorla's place. That's right. So where do you put Santi? You put him back on the left? Well, perhaps not. So where do you put Alexis? And so, because the team precisely has managed to find some kind of balance and equilibrium for the second part of the season, I think Wenger is loath to change that. He's found a system which is defensively actually far more solid than it's been for a while.
Yeah.
Also, a system which brought a number of victories, some of them very impressive victories indeed, like the one in Manchester City. So why would you change that? And it's a bit of a problem to make a this all fit, and particularly Jack. I mean, who is I'm still unsure of what Wilshere's best position is. I still don't know.
Yeah, there's a couple of players like that in the squad, aren't there? I mean, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is one of them.
I've put him myself. I would put him on the right. I mean, I'm sure he can do a job anywhere, but he offers so much in terms of, and also he offers so much protection to his right back. You know, who is? I mean, Bellerin is. I love him, one of the revelations of the season, but it's a bit of an experience, and sometimes he's been let down by lack of cover, and the Ox provides this kind of cover.
Yeah.
Other than he's capable of doing it, yeah. Far more than Theo.
Yeah. All right, well, look, that's obviously something that Arsene Wenger's got to figure out, and not just this season, but obviously going forward, because Ramsey and Wilshere are two players of a vintage that suggests they're going to be in the first team for a long time to come, so he's going to figure out a way of making them fit in. Now, we're not going to speak before the cup final, so a couple of quick questions before we go. The keeper issue is going to be one that is going to be up for discussion over the next 10 days or so,
yeah,
the next week. David Ospina established as the number one goalkeeper now, unquestionably.
Yep.
Does he play in the final? Should he play in the final?
Right. Should we make a bet? I think he won't play.
You think he won't?
I think he won't. I think that it will be Wojciech Szczesny, and it will be his last game for Arsenal.
who played
against Hull?
Well, I get that. But the difference, I suppose, for me was that throughout the FA Cup campaign last season, Fabianski was the goalkeeper the whole way through.
Yeah.
And Chesney was the clearly established number one goalkeeper in the first team in the Champions League.
Yes, and it was the first chance to win the trophy since 2005. And what did Van Gaal? He didn't go with his number one.
Yeah.
Which I think says an awful lot about Van Gaal.
Well, what exactly does it say? Because I can't quite figure it out.
He's given his word, which is possible, saying to Chesney, you're going to play those cup games. He's going to keep his word. He's not going to change his mind.
Why would he give Chesney his word on that? Because Chesney only lost his place in the first team.
Yeah, he was picking the doghouse. Yeah,
because he was an idiot. His bad behavior.
exactly.
It's not as if he owes him.
No, I don't think so. But I think I'm saying that having talked to a couple of people who think that that it's going to be Chesney, and I think a better place than me to talk about this thing.
Sure.
Which wouldn't surprise me. I still think it's not necessarily the right decision from a purely footballing point of view. I'm not too sure Ospina would be too thrilled about it either, having proved that he was, he'd been a model number two and has done a really superb job since he's been elevated to the position of number one.
Mm.
But I think Ospina should play, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if it were Wojciech Chesney. And as it was Lukas Fabianski's last game for Arsenal, and it will be Wojciech Chesney's last game for Arsenal too in the FA Cup final.
Imagine. I mean, what odds would you get on that? If you said that you're going to play with a Polish goalkeeper in two cup finals, and for both of them it would be their last game. It's
rather splendid, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I don't know if splendid is the word to use.
It's very Arsenal.
Exactly. It's very Wenger.
Right then. Okay, well, we'll see what happens, and we'll talk about that on other podcasts before the cup final. But very, very finally, I just want to ask you your view of the season as a whole. 3-4 weeks ago, maybe even 2 weeks ago, people would have said, yes, you can see that genuine progress has been made. We're a better side. And of course, we know it doesn't take much for people to lurch from everything's awesome to everything is terrible. Never the twain shall meet, but somewhere in the middle is the truth of it all. What is your feeling on this team, how it's performed, and what it does ahead of next season? Have enough building blocks been laid for us to be confident that things can get better next season?
I think it's a strange season on which you will only be able to give a verdict on the evening of the 30th of May. And by saying that, I think you've defined it. If that day Arsenal, lift the trophy at Wembley, you'll say qualification, third place in the league, after a superb run of results, Alexis being a sensational in his first season in England, another trophy for 2 years in a row, you'll say that's a B-plus season. It's not quite A because there's not the big title or the fact of having actually competed for the title.
Yeah.
So you'd say that. If, on the other hand, Christian Benteke scores a hat trick, and there's a parade on Spaghetti Junction. People are going to say, "What a terrible season!"
Yeah,
we're left with nothing. We've qualified for the Champions League again. People get very bored with that. They shouldn't, but that's what I'm saying is that it will all depend on one game, and it's very different from last year when, honestly, that final against Hull was a bit make or break. As in, is Wenger going to stay or not? Is this team completely past it? Are we rubbish or not? No, we know the team has improved a great deal.
Mm.
It's paid. Unfortunately, it's missed out on two things: a decent start to the season with only 2 wins out of 8 games, which was basically by the beginning of October, you knew very well that there was no chance of catching up with the leaders, and completely missed out on the Champions League in terms of its performance against Monaco at the Emirates, which I think is going to be one of the memories we're going to keep from this season, and which is going to smart for a very, very long time. When we see what Monaco did against Juve, when we see what Juve did against Real Madrid, and you think if you see that Real Madrid, and you think if you see that Real Madrid against a good Arsenal side, you think, oh, we fancy our chances. And it's so frustrating. So a season of progress, stabilization, and frustration at the same time. Very, very Arsenal. This said, I genuinely think that we are two or three players short of a squad that can genuinely compete for the title and be a top European side.
I'm not asking who those players are.
No, but
where would those players be?
Goalkeeper, without a doubt. Central defensive midfielder, and a striker.
Okay.
It needn't be a world-class striker, this beast that I don't know anything about. But, a good striker, and to offload some of the work that is put on Giroud's shoulders. I mean, I think a little bit unfairly. He's got far too much to do.
What would be your thoughts? Sorry for keeping this going, but just occurs to me. What would be your thoughts on Petr Cech?
Oh, yes, immediately.
Yeah?
The only reason why I hesitated is that I think it's such an obvious choice. He's still young for a keeper. He's probably, I would say, perhaps the best professional I've seen in the game in terms of his attitude to his job. He's a magnificent man in the dressing room. He's a born winner. He's a very charismatic man, very intelligent man, very good man too. I cannot speak highly enough of Petr Cech, both as a keeper and as a footballer more generally, and as a human being. He would be a wonderful, wonderful addition to the squad. And Arsene loves him, which is probably why Mourinho is absolutely furious at the idea of losing him to Arsenal, because he would be... I mean, but Cech is like Loris or De Gea. He's somebody who he saves you or gives you about 15 to 20 points a season by his keeping alone. He's one of those. So, yeah, absolutely.
That's a lot of points.
I promise you, if you look at Loris and you look at the number of games in which they have saved 2 points, or actually all three, you'll be amazed. And the same was true of Petr Cech when he was at Chelsea, when he was number one, particularly in the 2011-2012 season. Mm.
What about concerns people would have that the simple fact that Chelsea are willing to sell him?
Well, they're willing to sell him because they struck a deal with Cech. He's been at the club for 11 years. Mm-hmm. And when they decided to bring Thibaut Courtois back, it was fairly obvious only one of them could be number one.
Yeah.
They decided to go for Courtois, which again was a logical solution, because he's simply younger and potentially, even if I don't think that Courtois is the finished article, he has got the potential to be perhaps the best keeper on the planet. So therefore, Petr Cech was put in a number two position. On the few occasions that he could show what he could do, he was absolutely magnificent. I'm thinking of that game against Everton in the league at Stamford Bridge, where he put together a performance which was, I mean, absolutely, and I will use the word, world-class in that particular instance. So, and he can't stay. You know, he's not 38, 39 years old. He's got another 5-6 years easily at the very top. And you just have got to see the clubs who are after him to understand that, yes, he's got the talent. It's Manchester United, it's Paris Saint-Germain, it's Arsenal. Mm. That's not too bad, I mean, in terms of of suitors.
Yeah, they might have an idea what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I think then another thing you shouldn't underestimate is the fact that Cech is now in London, his family is settled in London, and he's a family man as well.
All right. Say no more.
I'll say no more.
Giving the nose a bit of a tap there, Philippe. Thank you.
Yes.
A pleasure, as always. We will catch up with you next season, of course. So
yes.
For everything you brought to us this season, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You can find Philippe on Twitter at Philippe Eau Claire. So please do give him a follow if you're not already. And we will talk to him next season, because next week there's going to be like a pre-FA Cup final Arsecast. Don't know quite what I'm going to do there. Might be a kind of a round table thing, something like that. Last year there was, because it was so long since we've been in a final, we were able to sort of go round people and get memories of the FA Cup final. But of course, when this is the second year in a row that you're going to be in a final, doesn't quite work that way. But maybe we'll get like a round table thing and see how it all goes. But something anyway, ahead of next weekend's FA Cup final. And then after that, we're into the summer, and it's like, well, we don't do the Arsecast in the summer. So we're going to take a little bit of a break from the Arscast regular, which will return the start of the season. Although, I could be wrong, I think there's normally one postseason Arscast, isn't there? Again, that's kind of a roundtable, how did it all go sort of thing. Anyway, we'll figure it out. Let's not worry about it for the moment. Last week, I gave you the chance to win a copy of Together, the story of Arsenal's unbeaten season. And all you had to do to enter was just send an email to the competition.arsblog.com address. So I'm just going to like scroll up and down now all the entries. I don't have the random number generator to hand. So I'm just going to scroll up and down and pick one. And the winner is Philip Cronstrom. Cronstrom. Philip Cronstrom. Well done to you, Philip Cronstrom. I don't know where you're from. Probably somewhere like Spain or Portugal, because you've got those little dots on your name. No, I know. He's Scandinavian somewhere, I'm sure. So wherever you are, Philip Cronstrom, you have won yourself a copy of Together, the story of Arsenal's unbeaten season. And if you want to pick one up, you still can. They're on shop.arsblog.com, shop.arsblog.com. Some of the hardbacks left. And of course, we've just launched a brand new range of t-shirts and hoodies and Boilk mugs. It's true. Actually, that's what I should do. To celebrate this, I should give away a Boilk mug. That's what I'll do. All right. On this week's show, I am going to give away a Boilk mug. And the question is, I should really think about these questions. Who are we playing at the weekend? West Brom. They're kind of boring. How do you think of a question to do with West Brom? Oh, okay. I got one. Which former Invincible ended up playing for West Brom? Which former Invincible ended up playing for West Brom? Answers to competition@arsblog.com, and you can win yourself a brand new, makes your coffee more delicious than anything else, except if you put like a little bit of bourbon in it, a Boilk mug. We haven't had them for ages, and if you want to buy one, you can go to the website arsblog.com. On the menu, the main menu, you'll see one for shop, and then just hover over the one for t-shirts and mugs, and there's all kinds of t-shirts there. There's Dennis Bergkamp t-shirt, Alexis t-shirt, Thierry Henry t-shirt, the Arsblog logo t-shirt. We've got the Leave Him Down and Play On t-shirt, Boilk mugs. I think there could even be a Boilk t-shirt as well. So do check it out. Go to arsblog.com, click on the menu bar and shop, and you can figure it out. You guys know how to do it because you're all very internet savvy and friendly. So, final league game of the season against West Brom on Sunday. Everything happens on Sunday, of course. And, well, I don't quite know what's going to happen in terms of the team. There isn't any team news as yet because we only played last night, and I'm recording this on Thursday night, so nothing really has come through, and we won't hear anything until the manager gives his press conference on Friday morning. But I suspect there might well be some changes. I think there might be some changes all over. I think you could see Walcott start. I think you could see Gabriel start, for example. If he is going to play Wojciech Szczęsny in the cup final, if, then he is going to have to give him a game, isn't he? I think we can take a cue from whatever happens this weekend as to what's going to happen in the cup final, because last year, Lukasz Fabianski played in our final home or final game of the season. I don't know whether it was at home or away. I can't remember. But he played in the final game. And that warmed him up for the FA Cup final. And I think if Szczęsny plays on Sunday, that means he's going to pick Szczęsny in the final. Whew! There is a decision. But we'll have to wait and see. And it's something we can discuss at length next week, because that's pretty much all anyone's going to be talking about, really, is the FA Cup final. And who the hell is he going to play in goal? Will he do the mad thing and play the goalkeeper that he doesn't even pick for the league anymore, like he did last season? He might think that's kind of lucky. I did this last season and it worked out all right, apart from the fact we were 2-0 down and stuff. Who knows? I don't quite understand the thinking behind it at all. Last season, I would have played Szczęsny, and this season, I don't think I would play Szczęsny, even though I do think Szczęsny's a better goalkeeper than Ospina. I do. But Ospina is the guy who's doing it week in, week out. You know, he's made one or two small errors, but that's about it. And he's playing every week. And the manager obviously thinks he's the best goalkeeper at the moment. So that's who you should play in your cup final team. But look, that's all to come next week. What else is going to happen on Sunday? I don't know in terms of team. If we've got Welbeck back, if we've got Oxlade-Chamberlain back, they are going to have to play some part if they want to be considered for the FA Cup final squad. Simple as that. Debushi also. He could be back. He could play. And then the manager's got a decision between him and Bellerin. Wow. That's going to be a tough one if Debushi's fit. But as it stands, I'm kind of like the Ospina thing. I think I'll play Bellerin now, even though I've just changed my mind from Monday's Arscast Extra, if you were listening. I'm not sure if Debushi is going to be quite fit enough. We'll see. Lots will be going on then on Sunday that we can draw inferences from and take suggestions from and hints about what might happen next weekend at Wembley. But look, we have to get this game out of the way. West Brom are, they had a good win during the week, didn't they, when they beat Chelsea 3-0 and Fabregas got sent off rather hilariously for booting the ball into somebody's head. I thought that was all very, very funny, but hopefully they're completely and utterly switched off and won't be even trying, won't be tackling. You'd like them not to tackle because you'd hate to lose somebody to injury in the week before the final. But look, let's just get the point or the 3 points and maybe some goals. That would be good, some goals. Because we haven't scored in a little while. So if we could find that spark again, that would also be handy. So look, that's it. And James and I will be here on Monday with the Arscast Extra. We'll look back on the game against West Brom and on last season. By Monday, it will be last season in the Premier League. Whew, it really did fly by. So look, have yourselves a great weekend. Let's keep fingers crossed for Sunday. Talk to you on the Arscast Extra on Monday and, of course, on next week's Arscast. So until then, cheers. Bye-bye. And as you can imagine, tensions were high following the flight of the earls, and authorities were concerned that there might be a wider conspiracy among the Gaelic lords of the north. This was based partly on the evidence of the Irish Lord Hoth, who'd informed the government of a major plot. In this situation of heightened security, the governor of Derry, George Paulet, overreacted to reports that O'Doherty and a number of his followers were assembling for a planned revolt and marched out with the troops. O'Doherty was, in fact, taking part in a tree-felling expedition to the Cairnmore Woods near his home, rather than assembling a rebellion on Tory Island, as they'd been led to believe. Now, we'll pick that up in the next lecture, but does anybody, before we finish, have any questions? Nobody? Okay, well, look. Oh, you there? You have a question? Oh, I fall for it every fucking time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.